Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Driven in the air, deep right field, get out the tape measure, long gone. Michael Busch with his third home run. Swinging a fly ball to right. That ball is going to be a home run. Michael Busch with another home run.
High fly ball hit to deep right center field. This may go. It's gone. Another moonshot for Michael Busch. Cubs win. A 3-2 victory over the Mariners here in Seattle.
The Cubs end the ballgame with a pickoff of first base to end the game. Wow.
So Cincinnati, with an 11-4 win, they sweep this three-game series over the White Sox. And the White Sox fall to 2-13.
I don't see the light of the tunnel. You know, I don't see anything get better.
Our expectations for you were low, but holy.
But right now, I want to go to Barry Rosner. Who's going to win the Masters?
Hate to say it. It's such a ridiculous answer. But if Scottie Scheffler putts, he's 10 strokes better than everyone he's playing against right now.
Now, Scottie Scheffler. People have been wondering, who is the next star in golf? And maybe they just haven't realized he was here the whole time.
His stardom confirmed.
One, two, three.
Here we go, Tony.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons from 2 to 6 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
It was a busy sports weekend. It's good to be back on the show. Thank you very much for hanging out with us. It is Parkins and Spiegel on The Score, but we just got the tough news that Seiya Suzuki is on the 10-day IL with a right oblique strain. It was a left oblique strain in spring training last year that had him out for 6 weeks. Oof. But in addition to that, it kind of clouded his season until he got hot in August, Spiegs, because he was like, is this the real Seiya? Is the injury lingering? Is that part of what is sapping his power? It's a really, really tough thing to come back from. Eloy, by the way, is back for the White Sox, which is good news. He's DHing and not in the outfield, though Pedro says he could play the outfield. They're just easing him back in. So good news on the South side. Real bad news for the Cubs.
Absolutely. Obliques are difficult because obliques, you doubt yourself. You doubt yourself because you understandably are cautious to really let it fly because you're worried that it's going to, you know, re-aggravate itself and you've got to deal with a long time. So, I mean, I'd be shocked if he's not just full on out and they, for what, 3 weeks, a month of just complete shutdown at this point to just give it a time, give it a chance to actually heal. And another 6 week absence is obviously completely in play. I mean, I guess it's possible that they learned something from last year, and I know it's the opposite side, but
yeah, I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, it's not like that was the first ever,
yeah,
oblique injury that a team or a Cub, like that the Cubs have sustained. But I mean,
a month. I mean, what are we looking at here?
I mean, listen, Jed will be on tomorrow. Jed will be on at 3 tomorrow, and we'll talk to him about it. But yeah, I think that you can safely say that Seiya Suzuki will not be playing for the Cubs for the next month.
It's absolutely brutal. When he has been showing you the full bloom of his offensive possibilities, making that contract look reasonable, just hitting the ball incredibly hard, racking up hits, exit velocity through the roof. This is a very tough blow for an offense that has been looking great.
And just the team. Steele, Tyone, mm-hmm. Merriweather, Seiya. Already? It's April 15th.
Yeah.
It's April 15th, man.
Those are four big ones.
Those are four big ones.
Yeah.
It's your ace. It's your
innings eater.
Your most expensive starting pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
Your, what, second most expensive position player, right, behind Dansby, would be Saya?
Bellinger, I think, on the year.
On the year, Bellinger, on the total value of contract.
Yeah.
Total value of contract, Saya. And then Merriweather, dependable, known piece in bullpen that is struggling.
High leverage, killer. Like, Merriweather had developed and locked himself in as you know, you liked him in the eighth, but more than you liked Neris. And that's even before Neris showed you some of the flaws that he's shown you so far. So, yeah, you've lost your dependable innings eater in the rotation, your ace in the rotation, your arguably your best offensive player in Seiya Suzuki, and your second best or best high leverage reliever in Merriweather. So it's brutal, but what you got? Here we go. Alexander Canario can hit a little bit. Time to come up and show it.
No question. I mean, it's a sport of injury. It's a marathon. It's a sport of attrition, all of that stuff. And the Cubs organization is deep. That's probably the biggest selling point of it, right? It doesn't have the most star power, doesn't have the most swing and miss stuff, doesn't have the most power naturally in the lineup in terms of things that they've accomplished at the big league level.
Mm-hmm.
The number one asset we would have said coming into the season was depth, and it's being tested very, very early. The Central is probably outperforming expectations, but the teams in front of the Cubs, it's too early to look at the standings, but just to do it anyway, are the teams that you would not expect to be able to sustain this over the full season. Certainly you wouldn't expect it with Pittsburgh. Maybe Milwaukee has more organizational health, so you believe in it a little bit more. But given all they lost and how young they are, don't really fear the teams that are in front of you, but they've obviously started very hot. So this is... tough time with a tough schedule, and you need some of these pitchers to come back because the Cubs offense is not going to be able to slug for 6 runs a game for the foreseeable future. I just hope they're still above 500 when Saya comes back. They're only 9-6.
Yeah, but you know, it's with this tough stretch, they've been hanging with this very tough stretch of opponents, and they just won their first series on the road, and now you go into Arizona, and you'll have Hendricks tomorrow after you've got Ben Brown tonight. And Tyone probably on Wednesday in the day game there on getaway day. That'll be during our show. And meanwhile, Arizona has Merrill Kelly, who's very good, smart veteran pitcher who was great in the postseason last year. They've got him, and they've got Brandon Fatt on Wednesday. But they got a guy you should really be able to get to tomorrow. So you ought to be able to get to him. And Go ahead and win this. Go ahead and win this series and come back with another meatloaf and take some 2 out of 3.
Yeah. All right. There we go. That's the plan, and the other guys now need to step up. Did you enjoy, you heard it there in Alex's weekend recap open of sorts, which is a good thing to do given how much was going on. I know I love it. We were watching it as we were drinking beers and putting on tuxes before the Nick Wright wedding vow renewal ceremony, which was absolutely lovely over the weekend. We were watching the Masters. We were getting updates throughout the whole thing. But it was weird, man. I probably watched less of this Masters than any Masters in the last, like, 20 years of life because just travel, the wedding, the rehearsal, traveling back on Sunday, then Owen's T-ball first practice on Sunday afternoon. It was a very weird Masters for me. Did you enjoy it?
Yes, Saturday was really, really fun. Like, there was a ton of action on Saturday with good players, you know, there at the top, and a whole bunch of good players moving around and, like, the lead changing hands, and you're seeing new guys with Aberg and obviously Scheffler lingering, and then the front nine was really tight. I think there were 4 people tied after 8 holes at one point. 4 people tied at 7 under, and then Scheffler just blew everybody away. And I didn't watch a ton of the back nine after Scheffler had distanced himself, and the Cubs were having good drama in Seattle. I ended up focusing there, but I mean, he's outrageous, isn't he? As a lover of golf, the way that you are, this is a guy who has the best irons and is one of the best drivers and is now one of the best in short games. Like, all the stats and all the measurables were all there for his complete game at this point.
Yeah, he is right now in the best stretch of golf statistically, not in terms of trophies in a trophy case,
But statistically, this is the best golfer we've seen since Tiger Woods' heyday.
Yeah, so he's number one for a full calendar year, Scheffler. First time since Tiger in 2009. And I saw this, Danny, 35 appearances on some of the toughest golf courses in the world. His average score is 67.6. He has not shot a round over par in 232 days, Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah, that's completely ridiculous. The big thing had been putting, and he was a good putter this weekend relative to the field. It's also not fair when he chips in three times.
Yeah.
It's like if this guy is – so there's a video of Scotty Scheffler on the internet that is one of the craziest things I've ever seen. You know, they've got the – it's called like a TrackMan. It's the equivalent of the Rapsodo machine. It's what like the golf simulators have that'll show you how far you hit the ball and what your smash factor is and your launch angle and all that. Hmm. And it's Scheffler on the course, and he hits a driver, and he turns to the guy and he goes 308, and then the machine goes 308.
Oh, wow.
And then they're in the fairway and he's hitting a 5-iron and he's like 217, and he's like, yep, 217. And he's so dialed in with his clubs and his distances that he knows exactly where everyone is going based on how he hits it on feel. And this weekend, I'm not kidding, I don't think he had his A game. His distances were off. Like the around the green stuff, to your point, was better than it normally is.
Yeah.
But normally he is perfect off the tee, perfect with his irons, and his distance was a little off. It felt like the wind and the course conditions were confusing him a bit. And so he wasn't as dialed in on that stuff. And Morikawa is maybe the second best iron player in the world. And Morikawa for a while seemed more dialed in with the approaches and the conditions. But Scheffler is just so much better than everyone else that if he's doing it around the green, he's going to win these tournaments easily. And that's exactly what happened yesterday. He is, because I mean, Spieth had an incredible stretch. It just wasn't as long as this. Rahm had an incredible stretch. Wasn't as good as this relative to the rest of the field. There were a couple of guys playing really well at the time. So in terms of like relative to the field, this is the best stretch of golf that anyone has had since Tiger Woods in the early 2000s.
And he's winning as the world number one. He's winning majors as the world number one. He's the first and only him and Tiger have won multiple majors while ranked world number one. So it's like everybody knows that he's that dude and he's playing like that dude. It's just the level of dominance when everybody is expecting you to be that dominant shows you that for that game, which is so dominated by what is between the ears, his level of calm confidence is unbelievable to watch.
Only player in my lifetime, well, I guess I should say since I've been watching golf, since Tiger in 97, to be a 4.5-to-1 or lower favorite at the Masters, because that's what he was. He was plus 450 to win the Masters, is Tiger Woods. You're not supposed to be 4-to-1 to win a golf tournament.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? The top 50 guys make the cut plus ties.
They're all there.
And this is one of the few tournaments that isn't splintered, right? Bryson is there. DJ is there. Cam Smith is there. Like the live guys are there.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is not a split tournament. This is the one that everyone gears up for. Everyone tries to win. And he went in as a plus 450 favorite. And by like midday on Saturday was plus 150. And then for the vast majority of Saturday and Sunday was even money or better to win the golf tournament.
And so I'm fascinated with that kind of mental strength when you're this good. And you wait and wonder, like, is it going to fall apart? And I don't know, but like, you know, especially in that sport where golfers try everything to stay calm and confident, to just kind of learn how to relax and just do their best and not add pressure to it. And this guy comes pre-built, hardwired for it because of his faith. And I find that fascinating. This is a little bit of what he had to say afterwards about how he was sitting around in the morning thinking about it and starting to feel pressured, and then he kind of got himself back in the right headspace. This is Scottie Scheffler after the win.
I was sitting around with my buddies this morning. I was a bit overwhelmed because I told him, I was like, I wish that I didn't want to win as badly as I did, or as badly as I do. I think it would make the mornings easier, but I love winning. I hate losing. I really do. And when you're here in the biggest moments, when I'm sitting there with the lead on Sunday, I really, really want to win badly. And my buddies told me this morning, you know, my victory was secure on the cross. And that's a pretty special feeling, to know that I'm secure for forever. And it doesn't matter, you know, whether or not I win this tournament or if I lose this tournament, you know, my identity is secure for forever.
So, man, and I'm not saying like everybody with faith can be that good, but when you're that good and you have that kind of faith, it seems to be sort of a life hack for golf, you know, for that mentality. And you play it a lot, Danny. It's like, how do you not? I find myself envying that calm, that calm and that sort of superpower that's in there and lets him stay that calm.
I definitely envy it in golf or anything, you know. I definitely don't have it. I definitely won't be the person to get it from faith. You're correct that there's a ton of athletes that have faith and they're not all that good. So it's not his faith that is making him good, but I do think he's awesome at golf. And he said, because someone asked him about, like, well, why do you, if golf doesn't define you, which he's made some headlines about saying before,
right?
Then how are you so, like, why do you care about winning? And he's basically like, don't get it confused. I'm extremely competitive. I hate losing and love winning. I just don't let winning and losing define me. But when I wake up on the Sunday of the Masters and I'm in contention, all I want to do is win the tournament. And that strikes me as a very interesting blend.
I completely agree, dude. How do those things live in your head together at the same time?
Right, because the guys who we know and we think about as being obsessively competitive and great, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, they are not well-adjusted human beings. They are not balanced. You would not find many quotes from them in their playing days that would say something like, I'm not defined by winning and losing.
Yeah.
Right? Kobe kind of got there, which was what made what his post-career was going to like be very interesting and artistic and creative and collaborative.
He seemed to have found another level of psychology as opposed to just relentless winning at all costs.
But not when he played.
You know. And it was a journey.
Actually, I haven't watched the new special yet, but I saw him do it live, and I know one of the bits. Neil Brennan's like the biggest mental health advocate and proponent that you can have. You've listened. Have you watched his new special yet?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Yeah. He's got a thing in there about mental health, and this won't spoil, but he's like, I want everyone to have good mental health, but not athletes. You know, because he's like, there's something. You got to be crazy.
Yeah. You got to be crazy, and you got to be – that's funny. I'll look forward to the bit. But here's a dude. He's 27. He's 27, and he is competitive, and he is great, but he also has this calm and this ability to put things in perspective. It's pretty remarkable, and I don't see – I mean, it seems like a superpower. It seems – for golf and a solo sport like that – it seems like a remarkable superpower. I should also say he doesn't have a single social media platform downloaded on his phone. He has all of the digital golf publications blocked on his web browser on his phone. So he can, you know, look at stuff if he wants to, but he doesn't hear anything. And he's quoted with things like saying, well, if I hear the good stuff, then that's in my head. That's not any healthier than hearing the bad stuff, and that's in my head. And that all makes sense even just to me, right, in terms of how we deal with the social profile and everything. But it's just it's amazing, and it makes you think it's got staying power unless his life explodes in some way that we don't know is lurking. You know, I like Tiger's life ended up exploding, and like, oh, he's been doing that. Oh, okay, that's an interesting thing.
15 majors and 81 golf tournaments, though.
He did. How many of them after that life explosion, the psychological life explosion?
A few.
A few still. It's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
A few.
It's amazing.
Yeah. The 2019 Masters is one of the most incredible athletic accomplishments of anyone's life.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Like that is one of the most insane things that any human has ever done.
Yeah. You want to know a wild golf stat that I saw today? Not necessarily a stat, but Tiger and Phil have both won a major since either Rory or Jordan Spieth won their last one.
Yeah, man, those guys are different.
They insane.
Are, that is crazy. Golf's got a lot of like shooting star players. A lot of comets. They go by really fast, burn really bright, but fizzle out.
Yeah.
I mean, forever, people tried to make Sergio Garcia and David Duvall and Ernie Els and Vijay Singh. And all great players. Some of them major winners. Most of those guys major winners.
Mm-hmm.
But they all were like, next Tiger. Who's going to be the number two, the running? And there wasn't one.
Well, but
because a guy would come up and have a hot 14 months.
Sure.
And then something would go crazy for them between the ears. They'd lose their swing.
Something happens between the ears, even to true greatness, like Kepka, right? Kepka would seemed dominant and a machine for a little while there. Things fell off. And Spieth, as you mentioned, and I'll be fascinated to watch what is the staying power for Scheffler in this regard, because he does seem to have a remarkable psychological blend that's working for him.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And he has a real gap between him and number two, which is just very rare in that sport. So he could backslide a little bit. And by the way, when those guys, I don't want to like imply that all of those guys like go crazy or have trauma or something like Tiger Woods. Golf is just
it's hard.
Golf's just real hard.
Yeah,
it's a different type of hard than a lot of the other sports. If you just get 2% worse, you go from being the number one player in the world to struggling to make cuts.
Yeah, texters hopping in. One says his first child is coming any day now, and obviously children can throw you for a loop in any number of ways. And another says Jack Nicklaus had a similar mentality to Scotty. That's interesting to me. I don't know where that plays. I often think of of Arnold Palmer as like the Mickelson of his generation, but I haven't thought about what Nicklaus's psychological profile would comp to in a modern golfer. So makes me want to do more research to figure out whether those kind of things are true or not.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if one kid derailed Scheffler. He seems to have it locked in pretty good. I know that was some of the narrative around Finau. Mm-hmm. Too much of a family man. You've got too many kids. Don't focus enough on the golf. But it's pretty remarkable watching someone be this dominant for so long. And someone said, you're the favorites, which I thought was interesting. UConn in men's basketball, South Carolina, women's college basketball, Chiefs win the Super Bowl, Scheffler wins the Masters. You're the favorites.
So Nuggets? Nuggets to repeat?
That would be Nuggets to repeat. Yeah, Nuggets to repeat, and Dodgers World Series.
And Bears to win the division. Good talk.
And Caleb to be the number one pick in the draft. Spieth was like, you got to read this. You're going to love it. About your boy. I was like, oh, say less. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the score.